Ben Fagan here with another episode of Career Cash, the podcast. And on this episode, I sit down with community coordinator at South Florida Tech Hub and the host of the Mini Mic Minute, Nadia Volkova. On the episode, Nadia and I talk about everything under the sun, from her creative process to the importance of authentic storytelling and how she hopes to help people in the future. It's an awesome conversation. Let's get to it. Awesome.
It's your show.
Thank you. Well, as you said, it is my show and it is my honor to have you on the show, Nadia. So welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It. Thanks for having me.
Of course, we can't get started right here. This mic has to go, right? Because, you know, we got to go. I have to find the smallest mic I can possibly find, right? The tiniest mic.
Actually?
This is, yes, yeah, sure. It's not plugged into anything right now, but it's symbolic. Okay. Do you want to tell us what this mini mic, if you will, some might call it, is symbolic of? What?
Where do I have it around here? I should have brought it. But oh my God. Yes. Thank you so much for bringing it up. That's hilarious. Can you show me the difference again? Like the big one and the small one?
So we got lame big mic, boo. And then mini mic, woo.
It's so, not so much better for real though.
Right. So talk to us a little bit about Mini Mic. We're jumping right into things today and we're gonna get into the meat and potatoes here. So tell me about Mini Mic. Tell me about how it started, what you're building there, because it's really awesome stuff.
Thank you. So my Mini Mic Minutes, it's an initiative where I love interviewing people and same like you, but I do it street style. So I really, and actually it's funny because you're doing it almost like street style. You're not asking me anything in advance, which I love. I appreciate that. It's more authentic. But yeah, that's my kind of theory and how I live by is authenticity and honesty and just being yourself. And I just like approaching people on the streets, asking them random questions and seeing their reactions, and then doing like some of the post-production and then posting online and sharing with people, educating on different topics from all the way from politics to geography to like just social life in general. And I get some views and then just talk about it with people. Yeah,
That's awesome. So we like I said, we jumped right into things, you know, with very little context about what's going on. So can you kind of give a little bit? We'll touch on Mini Mic and then, you know, some of the other stuff you're doing, because you're doing a whole lot of stuffs. So was it just from the curiosity that drove you to doing this Mini Mic Minute? What kind of sparked this idea? How did this whole evolution come from? Because I think that's such an interesting topic when, you know, you have an idea and get it established, like you have it, where it's like people can look at it and say like, oh, what a brilliant idea. Like that just might have been such an easy thing to think about. What was that kind of creative process that you eventually arrived at what you have today? Walk me through that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so I always wanted to be a journalist growing up, but I never wanted to be like a TV anchor in traditional sense of it, because I thought that's very fake. It's very staged. You have all the cameras and people like touching you and doing whatever you need the makeup. And I just wanted to be a journalist in a more honest way. And I just always had that draw for news, that draw for interviewing and people and stories. And I guess that's how I was like, oh my God, let me just have something very mobile, something quick, something on the spot where I don't have to spend too much time on planning, on scheduling. Just for me, that was more of an efficient way of, you know, sharing my passion with people. And then it just happened to go really well. I got some good compliments and feedback and I'm like, okay, let me just keep going. And then I secured like a real client, for real, that they started paying me for videos that I do. And I was like, okay, this is for real now. I have to like make something even bigger. So I'm actually in the stage of like understanding where that goes. I'm not entirely sure. If I can just pop in here and say I'm looking for maybe a co-founder or whatever.
Please. Yeah, shout out. Any co-founders out there?
If anyone is listening, yes, please reach out to me if you're interested in media and production and things like that.
No, that's awesome. So going back to, well, a couple things here. Before I forget, I want to talk while it's fresh in the mind. You build it, you're getting the traction, and then you're like, okay, somebody's willing to pay you to do this thing. What was that like, where you're like, oh dang, like what a cool thing? Like how'd you feel? What was that thought process like?
So actually, I really do not want to be an influencer. I don't want to have a lot of like followers. That's not my goal, because I really don't want to be out and about for the entire world. I really don't. But I still want to be able to make money, or like side money or whatever, with the passion that I have. And it's very interesting, because the way content works is, for you to really make big, you know, six figures, you really need a lot of followers. Like, it's just the way to go. But that requires so much energy and effort, like every day of content. That just, like, it's not me. I cannot just do random content. I really need to do something that I want to create, you know. So I realized, okay, let me just change that approach. Instead of going the influencer route, let me just go somewhere else. So this is what I created, essentially. My target audience is like nonprofits and startups that are currently, they need to vouch their idea. They need to confirm with the people that their services or product is needed. Essentially, so they have, for example, a question: does my app work for the people? They give me the questions and I have them, and I go to the people and ask them, essentially, like, do you need this? You know, what is your problem with it? And then they tell me realistically that it's almost like product validation. It's almost and a review, right? You want to collect like authentic feedback from the people about it. And so when people vouch it and confirm and validate the need, I give it back to the startup, give it back to the nonprofit, and essentially they create content with it and then use it in whatever they have, slideshows or pitches, and to investors, and to show, okay, this is needed. And I mean, I literally get to do that for some cash prize.
No,
so
that's
it's yep,
that's awesome. And you keep mentioning the word, you know, authenticity and authentic, and what's so abundant. If for those of you, we'll have all the information for people to check out and all the descriptions below, you know, that good stuff to see all the, you know, the Mini Mic Minutes and all the cool interviews and work that you're doing and social media and all that stuff. But it's abundantly clear that from you as the interviewer, you're so genuine, you're so authentic in how you approach it. And I think that that's what creates such a cool product and makes it so fun. And so why is it important to you to be so authentic and do it in the style that makes sense for you? Because like you said, there's pressure, especially in kind of the universe that you're operating in with social media and TikTok and Instagram and stuff, to kind of do it in certain styles. So how do you balance everything that's surrounding, taking what works, leaving what doesn't, but still ultimately remaining genuine and authentic to yourself as you go through this process?
Oh my gosh, I love that question, because I think about it a lot. I think about it a lot. So yeah, to be in the content space, you really need to watch content, a lot of it, and to understand where the trends and what people are into. And then it's almost like watching content for me is part of the job for me, for real. And the way I go about it is, well, first of all, there's a skill. Interviewing is a skill, right? And for me, I want to become better at it, only better and better. And obviously practice makes perfect, right? And I was thinking about it recently. You know, what is my goal with interviewing? What is my goal with public speaking? How do I master it? How do I become better? Whatever, right? And I thought, well, I should totally try improv class. I don't know if I told you, Ben. I was like, I need to try improv classes. Have you heard from me about
yeah,
it?
No? Yeah, no, I haven't heard from you. I'm familiar with improv, but not familiar with your relationship with improv. So do tell.
So yeah, I was like thinking, I should try improv classes. And that's how I can practice, you know, into responding on the spot and having that quick reaction and talking to people. So I guess, like, thinking for me, the authenticity comes from, like, just being genuine and true to myself, but also getting better. I guess for me, I always want to have a goal with something. And with this, it's also just the goal of interviewing. I guess that's how, when I see, okay, where I can learn more about it and where I can practice it more. But at the end of the day, with the things I do, it's a lot of you go, 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 go. You do it in the moment. And yeah, I guess it's impossible also to be not genuine in interviews. Like, you show yourself, right? I feel like it's so impossible.
No, I agree. And I think what's cool about the stuff that you do, and again, this is kind of what it sounded like you were getting at too, is because your stuff, the style in which you do it, even like the hiccups, the mistakes, the awkwardness, like you make the most of it and you make it a part of it, because that's a real interaction where there's the awkward silence or like mm-hmm. somebody's thinking or fumbles over the words, and you have fun with it, which I think is so, so cool. And to your point, you know, very not, you know, news anchory, you know, which makes sense why you're, you know, in this world now. And to kind of give a little bit further context, because again, we're just peeling back the layers here. You know, there's so much to dive into. But to give context to mine and Nadia's relationship, she was a student at Lynn when I was working there, came in, I got the great opportunity of being her mentor as she was going through the Watson program. And in what was so, and we talked probably a few weeks ago, long overdue meetup, you know, which was good and important. But what we were talking about this, and it was something that, you know, really, really was, you know, resonated with me, was, you know, as you were going through, you know, school and kind of growing, it, like, first of all, it happened like that, which was insane. And then the thing that you mentioned right. to me, where you said, like, you know, on our first, the first meeting, you know, what was the concern that you had?
Yeah, literally. So it's just a mentality, such a growth mentality and mindset mm-hmm. now. But yeah, when I just met Ben at the first meeting, I remember I said, I'm afraid of being boring or whatever. Did I say that?
Yeah. Yeah. You said that or something like that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And such a, it's such a, like, I can just feel how I grew from that mentality and how different I am now, in a sense of being boring. What does that even mean? You're always like interesting. You're always like, you know, there. It's enough to be just there, right? You don't have to like think you're expected of something. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what was that transition? Was there, you know, some experiences that you were going through? What was that growth process like, to where it's like, hey, like, me just being here is cool enough, and then now you can begin to really embrace. And from my perspective, that was the coolest thing, of just like, yeah, I'm always here, I got your back, but let you go do your thing, which was, you know, awesome. And you've done your thing, we'll continue to do it. But what was that process from getting from that mindset of like, oh man, like, I hope I'm not boring, or to this, to kind of like almost timid, to like, no, let's let it rock. Let me go interview strangers, you know, let alone people I know. So how did you make that transition?
Yeah, for sure. I think a big part is it's the cliche part of being comfortable in the uncomfortable.
Right.
And I think that going through different activities and experiencing life in the US and moving here and then just being by myself, I think that just definitely brought the best out of me and making me feel comfortable in, you know, I have a lot to offer. Meeting people in the US, I was like, oh my God, I'm actually not that bad. Not to say anything bad about, you know, but just in general, like, you know, meeting new people and just talking and seeing what I can offer, seeing results from my actions, I think that's what brought me to the conclusion and just the growth. But question, I'm just so curious, how was your reaction? What did you think when I said that?
Well, like, yeah, because I just remember it was just I'm trying to think, because when you had said that, like, when you said it to me like a couple weeks ago, it rang the bell. Like, I remember, you know, similar conversation. But it's interesting, and this is like where I was kind of, you know, trying to piece together what I was thinking, was like, I could not in a million years picture you saying something like that now, you know, in terms of how you operate now, which to me is so cool as somebody who is in the, you know, quote unquote mentor role, you know, for whatever that means. But to see you saying like, that's why the mini mic minutes, among all the other things that you do, is just such a strong illustration for everything. Is just like going out there, you know, taking the world by storm, traveling, bouncing around different places, you know, all these things, building these things that, because I remember you coming in, and part of, you know, what you wanted to do, accomplish, you know, that kind of mission that you had with Watson, and the big focus was to do something in the media space. And I correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember the early conversations from what you wanted to do to what you do now is in many ways very, very different, if not totally different, but similar in the sense that you're still in the media space. but I remember mm-hmm. it was something along the lines of like messaging on like public transport, you know, transportation, you know, and right. stuff, if my memory does serve me. But so I think that's an interesting place to kind of talk from. So can you share a little bit about, you know, that process of coming in with this idea, and share just for context a little bit about what Watson is for people who aren't familiar, you know, what your mission originally was and how it evolved into more of the things that you're doing today?
Yeah. A little plug for my Watson people and my favorite Watson community at Lynn. Actually, fun fact, I don't know if you know, but Watson is so much more than Lynn. It has so much more programs around the country and even the world. They're a little bit based in China, a little bit in Guatemala, I think, if I'm not wrong, or somewhere in the Caribbean too. But yeah, no, Watson is a really cool community of entrepreneurs and people that are really willing to take that risk and take the leap of faith, how we like to say it. And we love to protect each other's courage. That's also another cliche, but it's really meant, you know. So yeah, I was part of the degree, the social entrepreneurship degree at Lynn University, and I got it within 3 years. It's an accelerator like degree program. And my mission, so we would like to say that people have their mission areas, which means they literally major in what they're passionate about, right? And what that means is that a lot of students have their own interests, which can be like eco-friendly, can be climate change, it can be social justice, it can be all the different positive changes that need to happen in the world. And people have their own projects or ventures that lie within that niche, and then they work on it throughout their degree or program at Watson. And personally, for me, I was always curious to do something in the storytelling like sphere, but I wasn't exactly sure what exactly I want to do with that. So yeah, I tried different approaches. I remember I showed you even something I did with a diary. I was prototyping a culture diary about stories from around the world, and I was creating like a journal. Basically, I designed a journal where people can write their thoughts about traveling, and I was thinking about prototyping something like that. Do you remember?
Oh, of course, of course. Yeah. I remember at the different stages.
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. That was fun. Yeah, now it's been, my mission has been, I guess, helping startups validate their products through storytelling and interviews.
No, I love that. And it's always so interesting to see how the creative evolution comes, you know, from, and it's interesting to not even like reflecting on, you know, my own stuff and stuff that you're doing or people that I see, friends that I have, you know, of not being like, oh man, that was so dumb. Why'd I do that or this, that, the other, or, you know, but embracing all of the, you know, the journey, because it leads you to, you know, these different projects and to see, you know, one project evolved into the next, you know, I think is really, really so cool. And so now looking at the work that you do, you know, how your mission has kind of shifted, you know, why is it important to you to work with startups, to work with nonprofits and to help tell their stories?
Yeah. I mean, it's just happened to be startups and nonprofits. But essentially my whole idea is, I guess, to speak the truth of the people, and that happens to be helping certain companies or products, right? It's not necessarily that I am trying, it just happens naturally. That's the whole idea of it. But I mean, I just love working with entrepreneurs. So, and people that are willing to go out of their way so I guess like it's both. I like just normal people on the street that don't like think twice about their actions, because I'm not necessarily trying to get something out of them on purpose, right? I'm not trying to sell something to them or be like, you know, enforce them into something. It just happens naturally more than that. And it's working. I just hope that I really want to see more results too, because at the end of the day, it has to be result driven.
Mm-hmm. For me. And so, how do you balance that of doing the work that's important to you and then being patient for the results, or, you know, waiting for the results? How do you balance that and keep your head, you know, level and in a good place?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So in a lot of the work, you don't see like you cannot compliment if it's not a result, mm-hmm. right? You cannot just say, wow, that's cool, until it's done, mm-hmm. right? So with whatever, for example, I'm also in the event planning space. And actually, I was thinking about this today. You can, if you, for example, if you're a designer, you make a graphic, you make it and it's pretty. You can say, oh my God, that's a pretty graphic. Like you see the result. But if you're in the partnership side, you, for example, you made a partnership with a company on something, you won't necessarily say beautiful. I mean, you will say yes, good partnership, but it's not very obvious. It's not going to be like a graphic. It's not so visual. Mm-hmm. And because it's not visual, it's very easy to underestimate it. In a way, okay, obviously if it brings money, yes, that's a result. You can come, like you can say, okay, it brought money, it's giving revenue, it's giving profit, yes. But still, it's not as easy to compliment it in a sense of it's a result, if that makes sense. Does it? I mean,
yeah, so really it's kind of like you're almost like underestimating, or like either not necessarily intentionally devaluing, but I think underestimating is a better way to kind of go about it, like the process, you know, or the work that it kind of takes to get there. Because again, to your point is like, yeah, you can say, you know, in that partnership or that merger, or the this, that, the other, where anybody that's looking to partner with Nadia, shout out. Right. We're trying to always plug that. But you know, with whatever partnership, like to the, you know, going on the example that you gave, was that, you know, if, you know, that doubles the business sales, or like in 10 years, you know, that was like, you know, a pivotal piece in the business history, then you can look back and say, like you said, oh, awesome partnership. But like in the moment, you know, you may not be able to see it. And so, yeah, to your point, it's a less tangible thing. And I think it's easy to, well, it sounds like this is what you're getting at, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is it like, it's easy to overestimate or almost devalue like the process if you don't see or like until you see the results? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, exactly. Like same thing with, I do, before one interview video comes to be, there's so much that takes, right? And a lot of the times I will interview, for example, 10 people on the streets, but only 3 will end up in the video for real. And it just takes up so much effort in realizing, damn, half of the work that I do is actually not useful at all. So realizing that is tough, but yeah, you gotta balance that. And just, you know, it has to come with it. It has to, like, you win some, you lose some, you know.
So because coming from the video space, that's something that I live with all the time, of, you know, filming hours and hours and hours for a 30-second video, and you're like, ah, dang,
right?
and so can you kind of explain and expand a little bit on that, like from the creator's perspective as you're going through this, like why do you pick and choose, or what's your approach to that? And why do, if you're interviewing 10, if you're only going to use 3, why not just interview 3 people? So why is it important to get more than you need? So what is your creative approach to that?
No, 100%. It's also actually, that's where I debate about it as well, of like, how do you charge people for the extra time you do that actually in the like doesn't even go in the results? Like it's always the debate of also how do you monet, like how do you find yourself value, but also don't overcharge and not undercharge. Like it's a whole dilemma. I feel you. And how I also see the fact that when so for example, I have like 10,000 like hours of footage, right, whatever, but I only use like 3,000. And it's interesting because the way it comes out in after, you can navigate it and make it into a funny video or a sad, and literally it's the same thing, but it's just a matter of post-production. Like, it's literally just this noises or the like transitions that make the video a story. And it's so weird seeing how my creativity or my thought process can change the whole story of a video. And that's why I also think, I guess it's easier for me doing video camera things than public speaking. I have no idea how you do public speaking, Ben. That's like a totally different thing for me, because public speaking, you literally cannot edit anything. Like, you're live, you know. But in post-production or in content, that's what I love about it. I can make it how I want it. So I can change it. I can cut it up. I can make it a funny or a sad video, like whatever. It's up to me.
So with that too, that brings up a very interesting point, is how do you balance telling their genuine story with your creativity and how you kind of want to tell it? Because that's interesting. Because I'll do the same thing with the videos too. Is like, and I tell that to people all the time, is like, if you look at it, the best example I give is if you watch a horror movie, like a scary movie with no soundtrack, it's significantly less scary, with no like wood floors creaking, doors opening, like ominous music. It's just like people walking around a dark room. Right, the music and the transitions, to your point, makes so much of it. So how do you balance telling the story in a genuine way, their authentic story, with your creativity and your creative freedom, which should also be embraced? How do you balance that?
No, for sure. I love that you understand me, because it's definitely part of the process of making the video. You have to add on like effects, add on, which makes it also a thing to debate on. Is it actually authentic, or is it made up because you edited it and made it funny? Was it originally funny? We never know. You don't know.
Right.
It might not be originally funny at all. So I definitely get that, and you just have to believe me.
Yeah. I think that's good, and I think an important thing too, especially for people in the creative space too, and this is something that I constantly think about, especially with the videos, and to going back to your point about, you know, like how I go about the public speaking stuff, is I love the fact that you can't edit it, you know, because that gives me some level of freedom to where it's like, okay, I go in, you know, I stumble over this, I stumble over that. The idea, my job and responsibility is, you know, just keep going, just let it rip. You know, there is no editing. Whereas a lot of times with video and in the creative space, you can get, it's like the paralysis by analysis. Like, there's so many choices that you can go with. You can, should I make it funny? Should I not? Should I this? Should I that? And there's like just that abundance of choices to where it's like almost difficult to see what direction do you want to go in. Yeah. And so like, I don't know how you navigate that, or do you, when you go into these things, do you have that vision? And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to like, you know, hey, was it funny? Was it not? Did I make it funny? Because that's still part of the creative process, and we don't want to like, you know, suffocate that. But that's such an interesting thing that you bring up, that kind of dichotomy between, you know, the no editing with like, you know, the public speaking or the live stuff, because the interviewing stuff that you do is definitely public speaking. It's just in a different environment, you know, but then you have the editing thing. So that's, well, what's your hot take on that? You know, just the general, the ability to, you know, kind of edit, in that paralysis by analysis feeling of when there's so many choices, how do you just pick one?
Wow. No, that's a whole philosophical topic, because liberation comes from restrictions, which is very controversial. How does that even meant to be? If you're restricting yourself, like, you're suffocating, but at the end of the day, actually restrictions make you more free, which it comes to place with your, you know, with your public speaking. You're like, okay, this is how I am. This is the context. I have to run with it, period. Like, nothing else. With all of the freedom of choice, with all of the different scenarios you can choose in post-production, it just gives you like, oh my God, do I do this? Do I do that? Like, you have to constantly edit and choose and make it, you know, how you want. It comes with time and effort, right? So I love how you said, you know, it's more liberating, which is ironic. How is it more, right? It's same with like any discipline. When you're self-disciplined, you actually feel so much more free, because you're, you know, you respect yourself to commit to something every single day, which means like you are worth it. But to some people, it's going to be like, oh my God, you have such a boring life because you do everything like a you every day you do the same thing. But it's not necessarily true, right? You're just committing to yourself.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. And the folks at home, you didn't know we'd be swimming in the deep end, getting all deep philosophically here, did you? And that was your first mistake. But to that point, and we're gonna stay in the deep end for a quick second here. Is excuse me. It is another kind of philosophical type thing that I really like. Is that idea of, you know, if your whole life, you know, because people are like, oh man, who wants to go through bad times, or who wants to struggle, who wants to this, that, the other, you know, have you know fail a test, or you know, have a video flop, all these things. Nobody wants that. But if you never had those things, then you'd be living life on this, you know, flat, you know, kind of plateau, and you wouldn't be sad, but you also wouldn't be happy, because you would have nothing to be happy about. There'd be no comparison. And so in other words, you know, you need the downs to appreciate the highs and stuff. And so that's super interesting that you say that whole concept around, like, you know, it's actually, the constrictions are actually freeing, because you know, it gives you that op, you know, the bounds in which to work. Or, you know, if you have no bounds, if you kind of, you know, more from an entrepreneurial point of view, it's like, hey, you can do whatever, you build your own schedule, all of that thing. Well, to be successful in doing that, you have to set some boundaries, you have to set some, you know, kind of routine there to do that. And so just popped into my head, I said, you know, I'm enjoying the deep end of the pool, let's stay here for a little bit. But I think that there's so much commonality between those different thoughts, and again, ultimately it's the same idea, but said in different ways and kind of looked at in different lights.
You just gave me an idea, because that's the reason why, and nothing bad with that, but that's the reason why most people do corporate jobs. It's because it's stable. It's because you just know you're coming at 9, you're leaving at 5. It's safety, it's security. Nothing wrong with that. Currently, I'm in that position almost, kind of. So, not my goal, but yes, I mean, that's why most people choose it, because of security, right? Which is why, I mean, you're restricted. From 9 to 5, you're restricted. That's your life. And totally, I mean, especially for people with families, that's how you can take care of your kids. You just shut off from work and you go to your kids. You balance your, you know, life with work. That's the way to go, right? Yeah.
No, definitely. And you nailed it there. It's ultimately about figuring out what works for you. You know, so if that's something that helps you operate in, you know, at whatever stage of life you're in, you know, checks the boxes for you, then by all means, it's not the 9 to 5 is right or wrong, the not 9 to 5 is right or wrong, the 7 to 3, you know, whatever it is that, you know, fits for you. And so, like you mentioned, you're kind of in that space right now, that 9 to 5-ish space. So talk a little bit about, again, there's so much to touch on. We haven't even gotten here yet, and we're already this far in. What do you do? What do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Oh my gosh. Now I want to do a plug for Software Tech Hub.
Give it to us.
I am a community coordinator, and I work with, alongside a small team. We have a team of 4 or 5 people, and we serve a community of 10,000 people, which is why we're busy. And yeah, I do events planning as well. And yeah, we have a hackathon soon coming up at City Furniture, which is really cool. We're going to have hackers 24 hours hacking their projects, and we're going to have cash prizes, and we're going to have a lot of like cool giveaways. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited. I honestly love my job. Like, we have really good events. And the best part is that, yes, it's like 9 to 5, but I really still choose my schedule. Like right now, I get to like do a podcast with you, even though it's like 3 p.m. you know. So I really enjoy that, and it's remote most of the time, but we get to like meet each other at events, which I really enjoy. Something I guess what I took away is like it humbles you. It humbles you to see all the people around you, and just being connected. I guess that's what I enjoy the most is feeling connected to people, and through events and through different like I don't even know, like conferences, I get to feel that. So yeah.
No, I love that. I love that. And that's the beautiful thing about, you know, what you have going on is, you know, you even said, hey, this isn't, you know, is this what I ultimately want to do forever and ever and ever? I know you're always building bigger and badder, you know, in your head, which is awesome, but you're really embracing where you are right now, which I think is such an important thing to do and a difficult thing to do, you know, to embrace where you are right now. And I try to take, you know, heavy doses of my own medicine, and do the best I can to practice what I preach, and don't always succeed, but we try. And that's what matters the most. So kind of, you know, looking forward here. And I know this is always the loaded question. What are some of those things that you're building towards, that you're hoping to accomplish, that, you know, the kind of one thing that I know is, you know, important to you is impact. You know, what kind of impact are you looking to, continue to have and build, you know, as you move forward in your professional journey?
I am also part of this community called Venture for America, and they have the credos. Have you heard of the term credo?
Yeah.
Okay, so they have core credos that they live by, the whole community, like people. One of them is you create opportunity for yourself and others. And the thing is, when you create opportunities for others, you automatically create them for yourself. And I think that's what I have learned the most from Watson, from Venture for America, from Sal, for the Tech Hub, or whatever it takes me. I notice whenever I open up a door for someone, or like I just share knowledge or insight, like it really helps me in the long run, regardless of, you know, do I see it right away or not? So I think that's how I really hope to make impact, is by opening opportunities for myself and others wherever it takes me. And I think that's how I feel valuable.
A beautiful thing. And you've done it already. You're going to continue to do it. And before we wrap up here, and we've gone all over the place, you know, which has been a lot of fun. And there's still, again, just scratching the surface here. We could be on for, you know, hours and hours on end. But before we go, it's time to cash out. So this is where you leave us with your most valuable piece of advice. The pressure's on, right? So tell us your biggest lesson learned, most valuable piece of advice to give us a little extra money for the road. So what do you have for us today?
All right, I'm cashing out with one piece of advice of, okay, so don't think other people's problems are necessarily your problems. And what I mean by that is, yes, you can be empathetic and sympathize with people, but don't feel the need to think to take on that problem and solve it, or, you know, relate to it in a sense. So that's my piece of advice. I just stumbled upon it recently while looking for roommates, right? And I feel very guilty when I'm like, well, this would have been a really great roommate, right? But and they're also looking for a room, and I'm also looking, but for example, something didn't work out and now I feel bad. But at the end of the day, it's not my problem. Like, we were clear initially. So I guess, you know, that's my piece of advice in life. Just don't take other people's problems as your problems.
I love it. I love it. So always food for thought, good things. And the fact of the matter is, we had a lot of cash coming in and out throughout this whole episode. So Nadia, I can't thank you enough. You're making me proud as the mentor role. You make me proud as a friend. And I'm excited to see all the things that you're going to continue to accomplish. So thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it.